one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, it's been a weird last few days for the Phillies and a really weird season. The Phillies did win a game on Sunday against the Blue Jays, but really nobody happy about the way the Phillies are playing as they enter their series now against the Cardinals in St. Louis. And we are recording here on Monday evening as the Phillies are in the midst of their game against the first game of their series against St. Louis. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the weekend series against the Blue Jays, and we're gonna play a little hitting season true or false here on this edition of the roundtable. I'll throw a couple of different scenarios at the roundtable and see what everybody thinks about where the Phillies are right now, as we have, gosh, just about 2 months left in this season. It is winding down fast. So joining me here on the roundtable, Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. Justin Clue, of course, writes for Baseball Prospectus. He also hosts a couple of podcasts over at the Hitting Season Patreon called Absolutely Hammered and The Dirty Inning. I'll get that out. He's also the author of Summer of the Cheap Wieners, what the 1941 Phillies were doing while Joe DiMaggio was hitting the ball all the time. Justin, how you doing, buddy?
Great. Speaking of the book, yeah, it's going to be pertinent again as the Phillies wear their 1941 uniforms in the Field of Dreams game this week that we're going to enjoy talking about on Absolutely Hammered over at the Patreon. But the Phillies note I wanted to bring up here at the intro was Matt Gelb mentioned it, but I think it will. We're kind of seeing one of the what ifs in action. Like we kind of had there's particular historic moments that maybe go under the radar a little bit at the time, but you can sort of identify as like conversation starters in the future, and you're doing Phillies what if stuff. And I honestly think there's going to be a big what if to say about Aiden Miller's presence in 2026, in that, yeah, you know, you're not really thinking about him anymore. You kind of get these updates in the bulleted lists at the ends of articles and stuff, but he kind of became a subplot again because you can kind of now see how a healthy Aiden Miller is probably up on the roster by now.
Oh,
probably,
yeah,
changes how you handle Alec Bohm, and that situation might even impact how you're addressing shortstop and any issues you might have with Trey Turner there. So, like, you know, there's a million different ways you can go down this road with a young infield prospect to bring up like that, and not having him.
Yeah,
has been. You can see what the impact has already been, and you know, you get to ask what if in the future about what it could have been.
I mean, do you even trade for Luis Arraez if you have Aiden Miller here on this team? You may not even trade for Luis Arraez in that case.
Yeah,
you might, but you might not.
Yeah, so I think Gelb was comparing it to George Lombard debuting for the Yankees,
yeah,
and you know, like firing your manager, like everybody changing positions or acquiring somebody at the trade deadline, bringing up your top rookie, like just like Kevin Stocker in 93, kind of just gives people a boost.
Yeah.
And I think that's ultimately what these seasons are coming down to, as we've started to see the patterns of this particular Phillies team that's so recognizable to us now, is that your season really comes down to if you can get five or six of those bursts every couple of weeks throughout your season, then you're going to keep winning at a steady pace. As far as like the mental aspects of the game go, you're going to stay pretty comfortable. And the Phillies are, you know, I think a little lacking in that regard. So the impact of bringing up, yeah, an Aiden Miller in that situation, we'll never know, but it could have been really interesting.
Yeah, the George Lombard Jr. Thing is interesting, that Matt Gelb wrote in an Athletic article that came out here on Monday, in that he was selected one spot after the Phillies took Aiden Miller, and the Phillies were considering drafting Lombard Jr. And now you do have this. I want to loop Liz Rocher, editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal, into this as well. Follow her on X and Blue Sky at Liz Rocher. Liz, I know you have something queued up here to start, but yeah, just to kind of piggyback on what Justin is saying here, the Aiden Miller situation has been bizarre in the lack of communication about what's been going on with him. And it is highly concerning that this kid will not play baseball at all this year. He's completely lost a year of development, completely lost it. I mean, hasn't swung a bat all year. And that could be a career ender. I'm sorry. I don't want to go there, but you know, it's very, very bad. And I think it would have made a tremendous difference in this 2026 Phillies season.
True. I mean, I am with Justin. I wish we could have seen what it's like to have him up and to see what it would have done to the team. Though, you could say that we are getting a boost from Larissa Rise, sort of.
Yeah, yep.
Is that the same thing? No? All right.
Well, he's 10...
It's not the same thing. I know it's not.
10 at-bats without a hit is his longest slump all season. So we're getting to experience that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, he's all the way down to 317 with the batting average after an 0-for-4 here so far on Monday night. His first prolonged slump of the season comes in a Phillies uniform. But, you know, that's just par for the course here in the 2026 season. But we'll see how things...
Yeah. This is them throughout history. Let us not unrecognized.
Do you think the uniform like physically burns when you're wearing it?
It must.
Like, do you think that's what they're talking about? Like all the Chase Utley Wall of Fame talking about Philly toughness and how you got to be tough to play here. Is it because there's like actually a steady line of pain that you physically feel when you're wearing the Phillies uniform that just tears you down a little bit, and the best guys can just get over it?
It's why Harrison Bader's performance last year after coming over from the trade deadline was so jarring in that he actually put on the uniform and thrived in it. Now this is also a guy who gets into drunk scooter accidents at 2 a.m. and has to forfeit 2 years
what
worth of salary.
What about riding a scooter at 2 a.m. makes you think he was drunk? And secondly, on a more serious note, I do think Luis Arraez will be fine, but it's just funny.
Yes.
It's just funny how you can point
it
that
out. It is incredibly funny.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the Phils here. Again, they are playing the Cardinals on Monday night here in St. Louis. They're 4-2 in the eighth inning, so playing pretty well. And then they're threatening here in the top of the eighth. But just in general, we're going to just kind of zoom out, take a look at this team in general here after the series with the Blue Jays. And it was one of the more infuriating series I think I've watched in a number of years, especially with all the late inning choke jobs. They eventually did win in the 11th inning on Sunday night, on Sunday afternoon, but only after blowing a couple of golden opportunities. And the bullpen has been an absolute disaster for this team. They're just having all kinds of trouble getting the ball to Joan Duran. So I want to start off, though, kind of like talking about, with some true or false questions. Get your thoughts on the Phillies as we sit here now. Just, you know, again, just like 6 weeks left in the season, 7 weeks left in the season. We're through like the biggest part of the journey already. So Brian Rosenwald on X dug these numbers up. Looking at the Phillies now, they are, since June 10th, 26-25. One game over 500 going back to June 10th. They are now 1-9 in one-run games, two-run games, and extra inning games since the All-Star break. So in one-run games, two-run games, and extra inning games, they are 1-9. They're 22nd in OPS, 25th in walks, 27th in doubles, 17th in slugging. OPS when trailing games, they're dead last. OPS from the leadoff spot, 20th. OPS from the four spot, 28th. OPS from the five spot, 25th. You get in the point, you get in the picture here, like everything is kind of mediocre with this, especially with the offense. At home, they are two games over 500. They were in danger of dropping to 500 at home if they'd lost on Sunday. So my question is, true or false? Liz Rocher, true or false? The Phillies are a mediocre baseball team.
Right now, they definitely are. True. That's
okay.
It.
No more elaboration.
Right?
All right.
Am I doing it wrong?
Okay. Well, we're doing a podcast. I thought you might expound, but
well,
that's
no.
Okay.
I mean, I feel like it's actually kind of evident. We just talked about it. Larissa Rise is in the longest slump of the season, and the bullpen can't hold the lead to save its life, and the offense can't take advantage of opportunities. That's what a mediocre baseball team does. Actually, that's what a bad baseball team does.
Yeah.
Calling them mediocre right now is just mostly a tribute to the talent they already have there and what we know they can do.
So, Justin, go ahead.
I think, I mean, when you say they're 26-25, going all the way back to June 10th, that's almost definitively mediocre. I think what makes it different is that you're seeing not like 26 mediocre players. You're seeing two extremes kind of mixing together in things like the superstar talent that the Phillies have, guys who can play on that level. Part of their problem is that they're not always playing on that level, but like you have guys who can perform. the issues with the bullpen are all framed around, well, you got to get the ball to Duran. On a bad team, you wouldn't even have Duran. So, like, that they have guys they can rely on in some of these spots. You know, Schwarber's starting to heat up again, and he's Kyle Schwarber. You know, Trey Turner was hitting really well for a while here in the second half. Brandon Marsh obviously had his first half. Like, you got some of these incredible, really, like, better than solid performances, and in some cases, elite-level performances from certain guys on this team. And then you have these whole messes in the middle. These, like, you know, this bullpen that just really can't stop come out and just choking and coughing up the lead and everything. It's just horrible. Really the least fun bullpen to watch since 2020. I'm going to invoke that bullpen. Yeah. Like, it is just so unreliable that it feels, it's not coughing or choking, it's bleeding. You feel like they're bleeding when they come into the game because it's just nothing can stop what's about to happen. When you see news like Killian going down to the injured list and they call Chase Sugar up, first of all, wasn't he with the team? Like, that was what the transaction report said. You're like, this is our answer again? Shugart? Like, come on.
Yeah, so Don Mattingly said they didn't even want to send him down in the first place. He does a lot of great things for the team. Yeah.
Why would you? Great.
And why
great
Alex
point.
McFarland? God. No, why? Alex McFarland. We're not bringing him up at all. That's beyond me.
That was the assumption was Alex McFarland. So now I'm meandering off the path here just to say that there's parts of this team that are so good and there's parts of it that are just so, like, so bad. And the combination of that does, make them a mediocre team. I feel like I think the better question is what makes them good. You know, like what's the reason they're still in a playoff spot, despite us having weeks after weeks of talking about what's wrong with this team? They're still sitting in a playoff spot. Doesn't mean everything's going to be rosy from here on out, but they were good enough to be in one from early in the season until now. And, you know, good enough to be two games within the lead of the division, but not overtaking the division means, okay, well, you're not one of the best teams. But if we're talking like between good and mediocre, yeah, I mean, the numbers don't lie. June 10th, that's a long time ago. That is a lot of numbers. That is not a small sample size. To be about a 500 team since then, to almost be a 500 team at home, that's a different kind of team than this team has been previously in this era. And yeah, I think mediocrity is the term that can define that.
So I'm going to ask another true or false question now based off of some. And Stark said on 97.5 The Fanatic, not long after the trade deadline, he was talking about the perception the league has of the Phillies. And looking at the top three starters, the Phillies have three starters that in a playoff series can absolutely win you a five-game series, maybe even a seven-game series. When you've got Zach Wheeler, you've got Jesus Luzardo, and you've got Christopher Sanchez. And you do have the star power. You have a lineup that is playing. They are hitting better since Luis Arraez arrived. The bullpen is obviously they've got a closer and little else right now. He said that the thought around the league is that of all the teams in the National League that could threaten the Dodgers in the playoffs, the Phillies are the most likely team that could give the Dodgers a problem in the postseason, that the Phillies are the biggest threat to the Dodgers in the playoffs. Now, we just spent the last few minutes talking about saying it was true that the Phillies are a mediocre team. So I feel like I know where we're going with this next question, and yet I'm going to ask it because I feel like maybe it could be true. True or false, the Phillies are the biggest threat to the Dodgers in the National League playoffs. And Justin, I'll start with you this time. True or false, the Phillies are the biggest threat to the Dodgers in the postseason?
Well, as I was just saying, there's parts of this team that performs better than anybody else. And one of those parts is those three starters you mentioned. And yes, having three awesome starting pitchers to use in a playoff series is going to get you, you know, the advantage almost every time, especially writers like Jason. Yeah, they're going to point to the three starters and be like, yep, those are guys. That's a team that's made for a playoff series. But we've also seen how having three big horses like that in your rotation doesn't really get you all the way there all of the time. I mean, even with the closer, again, you got to get the ball from the starter's hands to the closer's hands somehow. And this team has really been failing to do that. There's nobody that you can really rely on coming out of that bullpen except Jonathan Bolin. Can't really rely on the offense to come through for you either. Gelb was breaking down their last nine losses, and the ones that weren't the bullpen blowing the lead were one-run losses or sometimes literally 1-0 losses. So clearly the offense isn't something that you can super rely on either. Now, Luis Arraez, I think, helps that a lot on his own, just being a reliable hitter who comes through with regularity. Yes, as I mentioned, he's going through his longest slump of the season, but he does give you a little more solid contact and regular contact in a lineup that can be a lot more sporadic. But I guess I'm just yammering to say that the three starting pitchers argument wasn't enough to beat the Dodgers last year, and it hasn't been enough to beat a lot of teams this year, even with the Phillies sitting in the third wild card spot. So I don't know. I have my doubts that a statement like the Phillies are the best team to challenge the Dodgers when the Brewers have been playing so well and cited for doing the things well that the Phillies don't do, which is the little things, not overthrowing the ball, not committing the big error, not running into outs on the bases. You know, we're still seeing that in Phillies wins. So I don't know. I feel like a team like the Brewers, I know the Braves are kind of like, you know, their own sort of mess at this point with their injuries and who they're missing. But the Brewers feel like a team that has played more solid baseball this year and has given the Dodgers a little closer to the kind of game that could defeat them. And the Phillies, I don't know, right now the Phillies are just kind of defined by how messy they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Liz, I mean, you've got the Braves, you've got the Brewers, you've got the Cubs, who I think Cubs might have the best shot of knocking
Cubs off
the Dodgers.
Cubs and Dodgers just played a series that made a lot of people want to see them play each other in the postseason.
Yeah, that series would have some juice to it. So I think there are some other possibilities out there. And, you know, hey, listen, if the Padres get hot, they just acquired some pitching at the trade deadline. You know, who knows what the Padres might be able to. They haven't hit at all this year. If that changes, then that might change the equation, too. But you could say that about the Phillies also. And, you know, if they get some, they find a couple of bullpen guys that get hot, you know. So the question is, you know, naming, you know, listing all those teams in the National League, are the Phillies, true or false, the Phillies have the best chance of knocking off the Dodgers? They're the biggest threat to the Dodgers in the National League.
It's hard to agree with that, especially like the first thing I did was look up the other teams. I'm like, are there a lot of weak teams? And the first thing I saw was the Phillies having dropped like a bunch of games in the wild card to the point where if they keep losing, they're out of it. The Padres are one game behind them, and they're tied with the Diamondbacks currently. Like, the Diamondbacks, I don't think are very good, but they also beat the Phillies pretty decisively. And I don't remember how they did against the Cubs. I think they played them way early in the season. But regardless of that, like, the Padres are right behind them. The Marlins are just three games behind them. Three games.
Yeah.
The Cardinals are 3.5. Like, they're playing one of their direct competitors tonight. Like, it would behoove them to win and to keep winning, because otherwise they could just straight up not make the playoffs.
Yeah, it could become moot. It really could.
That's the thing. Like, they have to be really careful, because they are dancing on that line, and we're late enough into the season where we know there's a big slump coming, and they could be in it now, or there could still be one coming. This is the time of year where everyone gets tired of baseball and playing baseball and going to baseball games. Everyone gets a little tired of it, because the baseball still doesn't mean anything technically until next month. And that's when all this will presumably play out. But unless the Phillies are careful, they will not be a factor.
The Phillies lost 5 of 6 to the Cubs. That was part of that 2-week stretch where they didn't win any games. Mm-hmm. So to answer your question,
no good.
Six of seven. Sorry, they lost 6 of 7.
Oh, even worse.
Yeah, it
Thanks.
Was. It was pretty. It was. That stretch was just. Mm-hmm.
I had an inkling that's what it was, but I didn't want to speak out of turn. I would rather, but thank you for checking.
Oh my goodness. All right, let's move on to the next one. And one of the big storylines coming out of this weekend was the bullpen. The bullpen had a number of meltdowns in that series. Jose Alvarado couldn't get guys out. He's walking everybody. Orion Kerkering blew a game by giving up. You know, got the first two outs, and gave up 3 bloop singles and then a double. You know, so a little bit of bad luck there too. But his velocity is way, way down right now. All these guys are getting used a lot. Brooks Raley blew a save in one of his first outings here with the Phillies. There's just, again, some of these guys they went into the season relying on Alvarado. And I remember us talking about it in the preseason, saying like what are we doing? Like, you can't rely on Alvarado as an answer Like there was, but they did have. Remember, they came into the season with like four lefties that you really felt pretty good about, and very few of Tim Meza is like the one guy who's managed to kind of hang on during the course of the season as a reliable left-hander. So the bullpen has been a major, major issue since July 1st. Their 5.40 ERA coming into the game here on Monday, ranked 28th out of 30 teams in Major League Baseball. The fielding independent pitching, a little bit better. It ranks 26th. But what's really killing the Phillies right now, the bullpen, is the walks. They have an 11.3% walk rate since July 1st. That is third highest in baseball. And we've seen it over and over again. Alvarado's walking guys. Kirkering's walking guys. You know, you've just got... You've got too many guys who are not Sugart's working walking guys. Boland's, when he does have his blowups, is getting hurt by the walk. You just can't come out of the bullpen and not throw strikes. So as we've talked about all the different things that is a problem with this Phillies team over the last few years in the playoffs, and I think most of us have focused on the offense as being the biggest problem right now with the 2026 Phillies. Liz, true or false? The bullpen is the biggest reason the Phillies will fail in the postseason.
That's a really tough one, I'll say, because...
Thank you, I'm good at this.
I know, it's such a compliment. I meant it as a compliment.
It was a total compliment for me, I know, yeah, thank you.
I have a hard time. It's a tough decision because we've seen the offense fail so many times before, and I have so little faith in them, but... Man, the bullpen is good at giving games back. And that's what really gets you in the playoffs, is you think you've got a game won and you can put it in your back pocket. But no, the bullpen shows up and coughs up or bleeds up a whole bunch of runs. So, mm-hmm. You know, yeah. I maybe it is true. I think it is. I'll say true. Because the at least based on recent information... the bullpen is real, real, real bad, and I don't want to see them anywhere near a playoff. They don't deserve to be anywhere near a playoff rotation. The playoffs in general. If they continue like this, the Phillies will not be in the playoffs.
Yeah, Justin, true or false? The bullpen, I mean, I think right now the bullpen is the biggest problem with the team, but as in October, do we think it's going to be the biggest reason the Phillies fail? If they do?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think you could say there's a chance for any playoff game to be lost by, you know, an underperforming offense, a silly defensive misplay. Absolutely, this team's shown it's capable of those things, but this bullpen is the monster that just keeps rearing its head for this team, and they keep needing, like, you know, these guys are coming up short because they're overworked, and then they're overworked because they're coming up short. So like they're burning through relievers more, and it's just turning into this endless cycle that results in tonight, where you come into this game knowing, yeah, Don Mattingly is using Andrew Painter and Alan Ranhel, and those are the only pitchers pitching tonight because this bullpen needs a chance to catch its breath. And the problem is, it's not even like you're reading feature stories about this bullpen's really stepped up to the challenge. No, they've been getting beat pretty easily.
Yeah.
And also used a lot. So yeah, you don't want in the postseason, things are a little different, but like, you know, that starter who is going to be your swingman, that valuable piece, Phillies don't have that guy. The three starters they do have are going to get you so far, but there's not going to be, you know, 9-10 playoff games where you get seven innings from your great starter. Jonathan Boland gets it in the eighth and Duran closes it out. Like, the pattern's going to change. Usage is going to require that. And you don't know who's going to be available. So ultimately, you're going to get exposed here with this bullpen, because your only move left is to bring up guys like Alex McFarland and Gage Wood, as Corey Seidman was saying. And when he was writing up that prediction, he was basically saying, yeah, it's those guys because maybe they'll be better. And there's kind of no other reason to do it. And that's all. Yeah. And that's all that's left. So this pen, I think, is going to get them killed a couple of times. And in the postseason is exactly when I would expect that to happen. So, yeah, bullpen, I think, is the biggest thing. I think that's true. I think the bullpen is the biggest threat to them in the postseason.
I would agree with that. I would say that it's true as well. And as we're watching here in the bottom of the eighth inning of this game in St. Louis, Alan Ranhel is trying to give up a 6-2 lead. It's now 6-4, and the Cardinals have runners on second and third and one out. So this is about to be a 6-6 game.
Two hits for every out. That's a decent trade.
Yeah. But I mean, this is the pattern. This is the exact pattern. The Phillies have built up some leads in recent days, and they watch the bullpen, even like 3-4 run leads they built up and watch the bullpen give it away. There's nothing more demoralizing than that. But you, Justin, just mentioned that the Phillies, Corey Seidman talked about Alex McFarland and Gage Wood. I think McFarland, again, still, I know that they had to wait a few days in order to call him back up because he was sent down. I think it's 10 days he has to stay down before he can get called back up. Oh my gosh, is it 6-6 now? 6-5.
6-6.
Another RBI single. 6-5.
Oh, for the love of...
Still, did they score? Yeah, 6-5 right now. Oh my gosh.
Oh, God.
It's just... So turn on a faucet. Turns out some crappy Mets runoff and an injury-prone righty don't fix your bullpen.
Yeah.
And really, what else could they have done? Except many other things.
Except a lot of other things. Yeah.
A whole lot of other things.
Oh my gosh.
We suggested on this podcast. Give it a listen, Don.
So the bullpen is melting down right now as we speak. Alan Ronhell having an awful second inning here in relief of Andrew Painter. They're about to yak away this 4-run lead here in the bottom of the eighth. So,
needed six
again,
outs.
Yeah, needed six outs. Couldn't do it. It doesn't appear as though he's going to do it. I swear, I'm watching this game. Every pitch is right down the middle. There's not a single corner being touched. It's all right down the elevator shaft.
He's challenging those batters to hit him, and they are accepting it. And
they're saying,
embarrassing him every time.
We will do it. So calling up Gage Wood, I think, is the more controversial thing as opposed to calling up Alex McFarland. It seems I can't understand why that hasn't happened yet, why that didn't happen today, why it hasn't happened already this season. He was up a couple of times. He's only had a couple of appearances, and they just seem like they're itching to push him back down to the minors as quick as they can. And I don't think McFarland's a savior or anything, but I mean, he's not a Ryan Kirkering, right? I mean, it's somebody else to at least be looking at. So here's the next true or false question with Gage Wood. True or false? The Phillies, Liz, should call up Gage Wood for the bullpen right now. Now, keep in mind, they're stretching him out as a starter. The Phillies are also short on starters. Now, he's not going to pitch as a starter in the big leagues, but, you know, could it hurt his development if suddenly you're throwing him in the bullpen here in a pennant race? You know, they just drafted him in the first round last year.
This is, at this point, if you're trying to actually win something and make a run at it, if you're not throwing everything at this, then you're not doing it right. Like, throw everything at this. And that would include calling up Gage Wood. Just do it. I'm tired. I'm tired of watching some of these guys. I don't know who's got options left, you know, and that type of thing. They might be hamstrung by that. Who knows? But they've got to have a way to change things up because, you know, as much as Mattingly might have wanted to give the bullpen a breather, that means he's also giving I guess it doesn't matter. He's just essentially saying the bullpen is so bad, it would be just as good if we did Andrew Painter and this one guy. Right?
Yeah, well, I mean, and part of the issue with the fact that they have to do this tonight, Andrew Painter and Alan Ronhell, and the fact that the bullpen is being taxed so much, if these guys had done their jobs, like if Kirkering locks down a 3-run lead, you don't have to use all those guys. You're not going to extra innings. And that's happened a couple of different times. If you don't blow a late lead, if you don't blow a 3-run lead in the 7th inning, you're not using another 5 relievers. You're using maybe one other guy and then Duran. You know, so that's part of the issue. It's not, you know, these issues with the bullpen, they're not just, oh my goodness, what bad luck we've had. They're coming because of poor pitching that's forcing other relievers to come into games because they're getting elongated because these victories they've had in hand are suddenly becoming in play. They're going into extra innings. They're having to move different guys in. So anyway, I digress. Should the Phillies call up Gage Wood for the bullpen, Justin? True or false?
Yeah, I mean, if we're looking at one thing versus the other, like Gage Wood coming up maybe helps because he's a different option. Maybe hitters don't like, you know, he can ambush some hitters because they don't have a book on him. On the other hand, maybe you're impacting his long-term development. And also, it could just be a disaster because he's young and inexperienced and his nerves explode. But yeah, it's hard not to say, yeah, press whatever button's available right now. You know, I don't even feel like... I don't feel like I'm panicking when I say that. Like, I don't feel like this is like a hysterical situation.
No, teams it's just, have done it before.
It's a bad bullpen. Like, it's a bad bullpen. And we're past the trade deadline. If there's nothing else you can really do, then yeah, I'm all for risking that Gage Wood may not be. I just have a hard time believing this is going to lower his ceiling in some irreparable way outside of, like, you know, some sort of weird anomaly happening. So if he's just a new arm to throw in there, a fresh arm, somebody who can maybe get some outs that used to be hits when somebody from this current bullpen would come in. Yeah. I mean, you got to do it. If the bullpen was like a half step, not as bad, maybe I would be saying something differently, but it really is just a testament to the depths to which this, this relief corps has fallen at this point in the season.
I believe wholeheartedly the Phillies should call up Gage Wood. I do. I'm with you guys. I think this, we've seen teams do it before. David Price got called up in the heat of the pennant race in 2008 with the Rays, and we saw him, you know, the big worry is, was he going to pitch in the World Series against the Phillies? And they really never used him properly in that World Series to affect that series that the Phillies won. But other teams have done that before. They've taken young pitchers who maybe were going to be starters and use them out of the bullpen. That's what the Dodgers would do. If they had a situation like this, that's exactly what the Dodgers would do. They would figure it out. They would get creative. They would do something that maybe wasn't in their plans at the start of the season, or even at the start of August, after a trade deadline had come and gone. Next, true or false? Orion Kerkering and or Jose Alvarado will be left off the Phillies postseason roster. Alvarado's 5.77 ERA is the highest of 34 relievers with at least 50 appearances this year. It's pretty bad. And Orion Kerkering is just we know what happened to him last year in Los Angeles. We're seeing a guy who is losing confidence in his stuff game by game. I'm not convinced that one or both of these guys will actually be able to be on a postseason roster if it rolls around. So, Justin, I'll start with you on this one. True or false, Kerkering and or Alvarado will be left off a postseason roster?
So I pointed to Andrew Painter's performance against the Orioles as the inkling, little bit of a crumb of a sign for the Phillies that they were like, okay, we don't need to go get a starter at the deadline because look how good Andrew Painter looks, and he's going to rebound and he's going to be that guy. And I'm not saying he wasn't. He actually had another very encouraging outing tonight against the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. So that was cool. But I bring this up to say I think the Phillies are going to be looking for any little inkling of a sign again when it comes to Alvarado and Kerkering as some sort of, but at the end of the day, if they're still pitching at the level they're currently pitching on, then I don't know how you can take yourself seriously leaving them on the postseason roster. I mean, can you imagine a situation where you would actually want to use them? Like, I know every postseason roster has the worst player on it. Like, they all just by default have one, but at the same time, these guys have proven so deeply ineffective, and in Kerkering's case, completely out of control. He's got a 9.64 ERA since the trade deadline and a 32.3 line drive percentage. That's second on the Phillies. So they're hitting him, and they're hitting him hard, and they're hitting him solidly, and that's when he's getting them in the strike zone. His main issue has been control, like you said, John, just walk after walk. Alvarado, velo's down, giving up lots of hits with two strikes, and left-handed hitters are hitting .329 against him. These are not numbers that win you a ball game, and in the postseason, winning the ball game carries a lot more weight. So, if we're still talking about them pitching the way they've been pitching, no, you can't. It's got to be true that they don't leave them on the roster for the postseason.
Yeah, Liz, I mean, the Phillies have had some pretty rotten pitchers on their postseason rosters before. I mean, they had Michael Lorenzen on a roster and he never got to pitch. There was one, they had Taijuan Walker. Oh, no, he mm-hmm. was left off a roster, wasn't he? And that's why he got upset?
I feel like he was on one and then left off the next one. Like, there was a point where Taijuan Walker was on a playoff roster and everybody was like, ah. And that's the other thing. They might be on it at the I almost might reverse my answer here. Like, they might just be on it because of the other issue of who else is going to be there that we were just talking about. And it'll be like the afternoon freak out for everybody that, like, oh, Kerkering's on the postseason roster. ideally, he's not going to pitch at all. I would hope. Ideally, that they're just not guys who are going to get used because postseason baseball is different. So, you know, there's a decent chance of that, too.
I was thinking about which one would be more likely to be left off, at least, you know, which one would be more likely to stay on. And I think it would have to be Kerkerig because they do have an idea of what he's done. And they, I think they believe he can do it again, even if for some reason, if he can be even sent to the minors for a little while, just to get his confidence back up. The sending someone to the minors is not really a confidence booster. But I still think they like Kerkerig and trust Kerkerig more. I myself am running out of patience with Alvarado quite a bit. Himself admitting earlier this season, I'm going to have to learn some new pitches. I mean, I just can't throw it in there with velocity anymore. And I'm like, oh, really? Nice of you to realize this, man. I'm so thrilled. Yeah. Well, How fast can you get that going?
Alvarado being a lefty might even give him an added bonus as a potential to still be on the roster as they try to play the matchups.
Well, if he was at all effective against left-handers, you know, I think you'd be right. But you just mentioned the statistics against left-handers. I mean, he's getting destroyed by those guys. So, unfortunately, you not have a matchup advantage.
Look at the numbers. Look at the numbers, not the
numbers.
But that's a good question that Liz raised. Which one of them would be more likely to get left off the roster? I think at the moment, the way they're pitching and the fact they do have a couple other left-handers, it's Tanner Banks might be close to coming out. I know it's not exactly a thrill, but he's been on the injured list. Looks like he might be ready to come back. But I think you may have some other answers there from the left side if Banks comes back, but I don't know. He's pitching so terribly. I don't see how you could have him in a playoff game. I'd probably have Kerkerig on a roster. I think Kerkerig's pitched better than Alvarado this year. On the whole, I think he's been the better relief pitcher, and left-handedness doesn't really matter at this point.
Remember, you're putting him on the team with the hope of never using them. That's the main point.
But those guys, yeah. Well, and that's the thing is, like, you know, on a postseason roster, Andrew Painter is likely pitching out of the bullpen for you.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to be one of those guys. I mean, maybe he piggybacks with Aaron Nola in a game four situation if they ever get to a situation like that. But you're going to have Duran, you're going to have Bolin, Brooks Raley. Those are going to be your top three. And then you're going to have Painter in the mix somewhere, Tim Mesa in the mix somewhere. And then, you know, I don't know what McFarland's going to give you. I don't know what Kerkerig, Alvarado, or Banks are going to give you. Like those, you're going to have to round out this bullpen somehow. And I think one of those guys is going to kind of have to be on there. It would be funny, like if I'm sure the Phillies will try to do what the Dodgers did last year with Roky Sasaki and some other guys, and maybe try to make Painter into a guy like that. But that's where Gage Wood comes into the equation. And in fact, Gage Wood, by the way, who has experience as a closer, he was a closer in college, closed for his college team in the College World Series, also at different points. And so he's done it before. It's not, he knows how to get ready for a game as a closer. It wouldn't be something that would be totally out of left field for him. For Painter, it might be. It might be a little bit tricky to kind of get him used to that idea. But they're gonna have to get creative with this playoff roster if they make the playoffs, which again is still up in the air. We're kind of projecting here a little bit. Real quick aside, what is Don Mattingly doing? I'm gonna have a specific here, but like this is typical of kind of what he's been doing. Why did he use their biggest relief pitcher acquisition, Brooks Raley, in the sixth inning of Saturday night's game, trailing 2-0, and then use Jose Alvarado in the eighth inning, trying to protect a 2-run lead? Why is Alvarado still getting the more high leverage spot over the guy that you just traded for? Raley's ERA on Sunday was 2.28, and Alvarado's was 5.77. Somebody make it make sense in that situation, and that's not the first time he's done that. And also, why would he replace Kyle Schwarber at first base with Alec Bohm as a defensive replacement? And Alec Bohm, I messed that play up on Sunday when the grounder to first base. Why not? Oh, Why not move Harper back to first base and put an outfielder in right field, Brian De La Cruz or something like that? Like, they're just some of the things Mattingly is doing. I'm getting a sense why he has not won a World Series as a manager. He's no longer the greatest manager who ever lived. I'm just here to tell you.
Alec Bohm's been hitting in the middle of this lineup for so long, and he is, what, easily the leader in grounding into double plays with 16 mm-hmm. or something? Like,
all the time he does it.
It's I mean, we're kind of post debate, I think, on Bohm. So yeah, when you're sticking him in there for a reason, well, he's going to be better at this than I don't know. I don't know what manual Mattingly is reading from. He's got a system, but no one can really explain it or understand it.
Yeah. No,
he's not going to be here next year, I would hope.
No, he's not. He's not going to be here next year.
I mean, I remember he said at one point, he's like, I would consider it. I'm like, well, that's great of you.
Please don't.
That's interesting. That's interesting that you'd say that. No. I don't know if the Phillies are also interested, but you can be interested all you want. Though my fear is, would I rather them keep Mattingly or go with someone like Cora, who I hate to my very Cora? So
I like that. That was funny.
Thank you. Listen. I hate myself.
I like that. No, that was great. That's a dad joke, and I will make that myself. I'll probably trot that out at some point this week. It'll be totally out of context. No one at work is going to understand it, but I'm still going to use it. We got to talk a little bit about Alec Bohm. We're touching on him a little bit. He did not get the start on Monday in St. Louis. Kyle Schwarber got the start at first base. They wanted to get Bryce Harper some at-bats as a DH because apparently he fouled a ball off his knee at some point during the All-Star game. And being back in the outfield is aggravating his knee. So they wanted to get him a game at DH so as to not aggravate his knee. And so you've got Schwarber at first base, and Schwarber is having a really good night. 2-for-3, knocked in a run. They have Edmundo Sosa finally had a big night. 3 RBIs at shortstop tonight. So those decisions worked out pretty well. But with Alec Bohm, you have a guy who is really, I can't remember the last time a Phillies player was this disliked by the fan base. And I can't remember a Phillies player that people, maybe Castellanos at some points, but I think even Castellanos had more fans than Bohm has right now. You'd be really hard pressed to find someone who is in on Alec Bohm at the moment. Go ahead, Liz. Yeah.
And I don't, I mean, I guess I sort of understand why, but I also don't. Like, some of this just, it doesn't seem related to how he's doing on the field. It seems like due to a general dislike. And I don't know what that's about, and I can't pinpoint why it's there, because I think he's fine. Like, I've had no problems with him. I've had issues with how he's played, but I have no vitriol towards him. And I don't know how or why this guy inspires vitriol, but it seems to be happening.
I'll field this one. Oh, go ahead, Justin. Yeah.
No,
go ahead.
Please. Go ahead.
Take it.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just getting me.
Like, is there something I'm missing?
Well, he's. I say this. The thing that Alec Bohm has done well this year is hit with runners in scoring position, and that's it. He is among the worst third basemen in baseball by every metric. Now that he's at first base, it's even worse. His offensive output as a first baseman ranks even lower. And then it's just the mental mistakes. Dropped to 8th in the batting order on Sunday after making a fielding mistake in the 10th inning as a defensive replacement for Schwarber. He grounds into a force out with the bases loaded and one out in the 9th inning on Friday night's 5-4 loss after Trey Turner had just worked a 10-pitch at bat. It's kind of the brain dead things that he does sometimes that drive people crazy. It's just a total momentum killer that Trey Turner walks gets this walk to load the base after 10 pitches. And then you have Bohm, who just needs to hit a fly ball somewhere, smash that thing into the ground, a low sinker first pitch without even showing. And he does that all the time. He had that opportunity in extra innings on Sunday, bases loaded, one out, and it's a foul pop to the third base side. I mean, it's just, there's a lot of things, and it's just a continuation of some of the things that people have seen from Alec Bohm that are driving them crazy. The fact is, he's just not a very good player. He's below replacement level, and the Phillies would probably be better doing something else. And so that's where my true false wants to come in. But Justin, let me get your thoughts on him before I throw the true false out, because I know you wanted to say something there.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I think people assign personality traits or project their own personal issues on a player when they are just frustrating, when they seem like they blow big chances, when they seem like they ground into double plays all the time. I think for a lot of people, when Luis Arraez came up and knocked in a run in his first chance with the Phillies, and the next batter was Bohm coming up and hitting into a double play, that was a great like shorthand for a lot of people to point at and say, like, yeah, that's the difference, blah, blah, blah. It just feels like Bohm can't lock in. As soon as he's hot, he's cold. He's in too much of a hurry to fix everything. Like you said, no patience, not a great approach at the plate. He can knock runs in when you put some runners on base for him, but he can also come up really small in big moments as well because of that approach and because of that seeming lack of patience. And all of that you get sick of watching, especially in August, especially with the team falling out of their second wild card spot into the third, with a bunch of other teams nipping at their heels, and every at bat means more, and every game means more, and every run means more. And you got this guy who's just blasting that sinker straight into the ground, and you just get tired of it. And I think that's where people's personal problems start coming in. Those I don't think are truly real, because like Liz said, Bohm hasn't done anything I would consider personally reprehensible. Since he's been here, it's all just really frustrating play and frustrating approach by him. So I think a lot of that is just is people projecting on him after having the incredibly valid frustration of watching him play baseball.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so fair.
So here's your true false for this. Alec Bohm, true or false? Alec Bohm should be, if he's going to hit eighth and kind of just not play, Alec Bohm should be benched in favor of Brian De La Cruz or Derek Hill. Let those guys play right field, left field every day. Move Bryce Harper back to first base, and Alec Bohm rides the bench.
You want to change up the defense again? I guess it doesn't.
You are, but you're changing it back to the way it was. So you have Harper at first base. And now you're just kind of like you're taking De La Cruz and you're giving De La Cruz more playing time, and you're giving Hill more playing time in the outfield. There's still going to be some platoons there one way or the other. You're basically making De La Cruz an everyday player at right field because there's really no left-handed component. They're not calling Rinconis back up, I don't think. So you're probably just saying, all right, we're going to ride De La Cruz in right field for a little bit. And you're basically saying, we believe De La Cruz can give us more than Alec Bohm can give us. Nobody wants to say it, but I think it's true.
I'm being a coward. It just doesn't seem. It just feels like one of those moves where you're like, yeah, well, did you know that all of Alec Bohm's underlying statistics and peripheral statistics were among the top three? And that's like after you've already made the switch. But yeah, I guess in just the spirit of trying something else, it'd be a healthy attempt, I think. It's just, I don't know. You sit here and you talk about how all of his shortcomings, and the time comes to make the change, and you're like, is this really going to be better? But I guess that's the kind of thing I'm talking about when I say you need those moments, those decisions that give you a burst of energy. And maybe a guy like Brian De La Cruz came up and didn't make himself look stupid playing for the Phillies.
No, he was one of their better hitters when he came up. Yeah,
exactly. Like he was able to get that job done in the way that I think a lot of people wanted to see much earlier in the season, knowing that he was an option. So yeah, okay. I've yammered about it enough to say that yes, I would do that.
All right, Liz, what do you think? True or false?
I think if they're thank God the Phillies won. God.
Yes, the Phillies won. Nice inning from Jonathan Boland to finish it out. 1-2-3 in the ninth. That's close. How you do it, kids.
Boy, that was a deep, deep third.
It was
out.
A deep fly ball for the last out. Ooh, it was. It was
right there.
It was a long one. Yep.
What were we talking about?
True or false?
Would you bench Alec Bohm? The Phillies should bench Alec Bohm and play Brian De La Cruz every day in right field and move Harper back to first base.
In the spirit of throwing everything at it, I guess that is a yes. Like, it feels incorrect, and it also feels a little bit like it might piss off everybody else a little bit, because he's a regular, he's earned respect, and that type of thing. But at this point, I guess I don't really care about what they think. But I have to wonder if Don Mattingly does.
Has he earned respect? I mean, I don't want to sound like a jerk here, but at this point, if you're still, and I know this has been a problem with Phillies managers specifically, but like, if you're still thinking in terms of like, well, I don't want to disrespect this starter by messing with his playing time. Now, in the situation the Phillies are in, with the limited amount of buttons they can push, and Alec Bohm not really being ambiguous about what kind of player he is, I mean, you know, take it from him, and he's like, oh no, I'm tired of being thought of that way. But like, the results just aren't there, man. I'm with you, John. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, he's just we know what kind of player he is. He's just not very good.
Here's something that I don't think the Phillies players themselves would say, but I think is 100% true. And if you gave them truth serum, I think they would say this. I think Alec Bohm's a bummer. I think he bums people out. I think he has an energy around him that, especially when he's not going well, I think just brings folks down. And you see it, like the shoulders sag and the bats get slammed down and the helmet and the face and all the, oh yeah, it's like a whiny, pouty kind of demeanor that you get from him. And these kind, and I listen, we know that his personal life with his parents and stuff, all that stuff's been awful this year. And so I mean, this has just been the year from hell from Alec Bohm as a pending free agent. I don't know what kind of contract he's going to get next year. I don't know who's signing him and for what. It's not going to be
Royals.
Yeah, like a 1 year, $7 million deal with the Royals. Like, he's going to take a pay cut. He just is. I mean, there's nothing. So I'm trying to have sympathy for the guy, and they can't DFA him. There's people who say just cut him. You're not cutting Alec Bohm because you probably will need him at some point. But
yeah, I think we defended him when a year, maybe 2 years ago, the whole narrative was that certain anonymous players took issue with how emotional he was, and he would slam his glove after missing a grounder and stuff. And like, the answer to that was like, well, don't miss the grounder. And we said, you know, why would you not have, like, I would prefer to have a guy who's emotional enough out, who's showing some emotion. Cause I think that was a point in time where the Phillies were doing their head hanging apathetic routine where they just lose a bunch of games and walk off the field with their shoulders slouched. And it was like, oh yeah, but Bohm showing emotion is like in some ways the only thing keeping you holding on, where it's like, oh look, okay, he cares and this matters, this is important. But John, I mean, in the time since then, yeah, you know, that's probably the difference between commenting about it here on a podcast and working with it next to him in a locker room. You know, that stuff, if it's happening, is it takes a toll.
Yeah, that's just kind of why I'm thinking maybe this team, it would be an energy boost to kind of just have like De La Cruz out there or Derek Hill out there more or something like that. Because again, both those guys have played well when given opportunities to play. They have played well. They've played better than Alec Bohm has. So I would do it.
We talk about how important guys like that are, bringing in a guy, bringing in a rando, calling up a quad A guy and watching them have even just a couple of games that they are the star of or make a big play. And if you don't play them, you don't really get that. So they got to be here, and you got to play them.
All right. Couple other true falses, and we can maybe do these a little bit more rapid fire. Jesus Luzardo on Sunday had yet another fantastic start. Seven innings, gave up just two runs, had just a ton of strikeouts, 12 strikeouts in the game on Sunday. It's his fifth double-digit strikeout game of the season. He has the most strikeouts in baseball since June 10th. And the fifth best ERA, a 2.04 ERA since June 10th.
What's this magical June 10th date that we are now measuring all the Phillies stats by the way?
I don't know. I like it. It seems to be a good date, a date that will not live
in for me, a sample size that proves our narratives with statistics.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. I don't know.
Sorry.
That's what I'm going
Sorry
with.
For interrupting.
Thank you. No, it was a worthwhile interruption. Shut up.
I'm going to sit here and think of more comments.
I was not expecting that.
Sanchez has the second most strikeouts in the National League this year, 176, two more than Christopher Sanchez's 174. Here's a more well-rounded sample size. Over the last 3 months, I think we can all agree, looking at 3 months is good. In 100 innings, 119 strikeouts, 32 walks, a 2.25 ERA over the last 3 months, and a 1.03 whip. We know that Luzardo is good. We know that Sanchez is good. We know that Wheeler is good. True or false, Liz, right now, Jesus Luzardo is the best pitcher in the starting rotation for the Phillies.
I mean, going by their last handful of starts, I think that's a big old yes. Feels like a big yes to me.
Well, let me give you this one. Jesus Luzardo and not Zach Wheeler should start game two of a playoff series.
Now, that's a question.
Yeah.
I don't know if I trust that. I'll be honest. I want to see Zach Wheeler start a big... I mean, because we didn't get any that last year.
No.
I want to see him start a big game, like what is on his game. And I think... I hope he'll get back to that. I don't know if I trust Luzardo enough still. He still has a lot of volatility and a lot of inconsistency from start to start. Though there are, you know, pockets of good here, pockets of good and pockets of bad. He's just a peaks and valleys guy. And so, like, right now he's doing really well. And I'm like, he's going to have, like, an unbelievably terrible start soon. Everybody brace for it, you know, like don't stop enjoying him, but like be aware this is what he does, and so he's gonna hit the bottom kind of hard when he does, but I think he'll bounce back up. I just don't trust him more than I trust Zach Wheeler.
That's totally fair. All right, Justin, I'll give you both of those true and false questions too.
There were two.
I know that. Jesus Luzardo is the best pitcher on the Phillies right now, and Jesus Luzardo should start game two of a playoff series over Zach Wheeler if the playoffs were to start today.
I think the right now qualifier makes it easy to say, yep, he is the best pitcher on the Phillies right now, and I would start him in game two. I actually picked Jesus Luzardo to be the National League Cy Young winner this year. He is currently, according to Vegas odds, the seventh best odds, with 80 to 1 odds, behind six other guys, including Christopher Sanchez and Zach Wheeler. Just a quick update there. But, I would put Luzardo in the postseason. I think a guy who's going to be able to, he goes out there and just racks up strikeouts, and yeah, he can give you like a career high in strikeouts and still allow a few runs, but in the playoffs, it's really kind of, you're looking for dominance from your starting pitcher.
Yeah.
You're looking for suffocation of the other team's offense, and Luzardo is capable of that. Like Liz said, there's been a couple of miserable dots throughout his time here with the Phillies where it's just been like, but those are always bizarre anomalies that swing wildly that direction. Something gets corrected, something gets adjusted, and he comes back. And I think this has been one of his best stretches with the Phillies, the last couple months, honestly. So,
you can
wait for the looming shadow of that next disaster to come. But in the postseason, again, it's sort of like all bets are off, and you just want to see a guy that you know can strike out 12, 13, 14 batters, go seven innings, and give you exactly the kind of start you need. And I think Jesus Luzardo can do that.
Yeah, I know sometimes that managers like to split up left-handed starters in a playoff series. I don't really understand the reason for that. I think you just kind of go with your best two guys, and if they're both lefties, you go with them. And right now, I do think Luzardo would be my game two starter over Zach Wheeler, who started game three. Now, part of the issue with Luzardo was he was really struggling at home for the most part this year. At his last five home starts, he's been much, much better. But he had been a much better road pitcher this year for the Phillies than he had been at home. So that could factor in to a decision, but I doubt it will. I think that's mostly just kind of a freaky thing. And the fact that he was being forced to wear the City Connect jerseys for, I think, like half of his home starts this year, which, you know, undoubtedly will throw you into a tizzy and your mind will fritz out when that's happening.
God, I hate those. I just hate them.
One of the best parts of Chase Utley Wall of Fame night was that Harper was said they were going to wear the red pinstripes instead of the City Connects.
As a hat tip.
Hat tip to Utley. So, yeah, that was
so nice.
That was great.
That was cool. I got one last thing. It was great to see Kyle Schwarber hit a couple of bombs on Sunday. It had been a very, very long drought for Kyle Schwarber, but he finally got back to it. He had another big game here on Monday night. So I think Kyle Schwarber's back. Don't know exactly what was going on with him, but, you know, he... everything is better when Kyle Schwarber is hitting home runs. And he now is 35, leads the National League, again, with home runs.
Never stopped leading the league.
Incredible. He went like more than a month without a home run, and he still led the National League the entire way. True or false, Justin, Kyle Schwarber will get to 50 home runs this year.
True.
So you guys, true, you see another sure big homer hot streak. Okay.
Liz. I do.
I say true.
Oh, I'm sorry, Justin. I cut you off.
Nope. I was just going to fill the, just going to fill the silence. Yeah, no, I mean, he's definitely, when we were talking about his slump, Liz and I said, I was looking at it like, yeah, I mean, he does this sometimes.
Yeah.
This happens. Like the power just goes away. The home runs go away. The whole point that of being Kyle Schwarber is that he knows what he needs to do to adjust eventually. And he makes that adjustment. And, you know, there it was. The adjustment was made. And, yeah, I can totally see here on August, in early August while we're recording, that he is fully capable of getting to 50 home runs again. And if the Phillies have any kind of surge here, that's going to be a big part of it. And in fact, perhaps might even be the reason for it.
And Liz, I heard you say true. I am true as well. I do think he will get to 50 home runs. I think we are in for a big Kyle Schwarber August over these last next few weeks, and that will go a long way. He had a big August last year. I think the 4 home run game, was that in August or in September? It might have been September, if I'm thinking about it. And I'm going to have to Google that, or probably while you guys are doing final thoughts or something. But anyway, I think Kyle Schwarber's got a big August in him down the stretch, and that will help out the Phillies. We didn't even – I'm out of true or false questions. We've been gone for an hour, and we didn't even get to the Zach Wheeler mound controversy or anything like that. But
oh, that was going to be my final thought, yeah.
Well, then good. That's what I was going to say. If any of you guys wanted to share that in a final thought, let's do it. I'll open it up, and we'll start, Justin, with you with final thoughts.
All I was going to say was that when the Toronto hitting coach kept saying Wheeler wasn't standing on the rubber right, Wheeler's response was F you. That kind of makes me want to start him at second in the playoff series before his
no,
start.
It really does, actually. Yep.
That's the right attitude. That's the right answer. And just checking in real quick with the Zach Wheeler rage tour we were promised in the second half. Maybe not all the results are there, but the rage definitely is.
Yeah.
And again, I maintain that is still very valuable.
Yeah. All real, kind of like an old man yelling at clouds kind of deal right now with Zach Wheeler, but I'm
I love it.
It's fine with me. It's fine with me. Absolutely. Liz, any final thoughts?
This weekend, because Chase Utley was being inducted into the Phillies Wall of Fame, MLB Network showed Game 5 of the 2008 World Series on Saturday afternoon in the perfect place for an early afternoon to turn from a late afternoon for you to wonder what exactly happened to all the time you thought you had. You spent it watching Game 5 of the 2008 World Series, which was just completely delightful and so much fun to watch. There was the score bug was flat at the top. There was no hitter listed. There was no pitcher. I'm like, I was like, who in God's name is batting? I had no idea. There was no box. It was refreshing. And let me tell you, after listening to years of John Smoltz yammer pointlessly into the night about God knows what, listening to Tim McCarver was refreshing.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I'm not going to lie to you. I was shocked by how useful I found all of his comments. It was essentially just explaining baseball to the people who probably don't watch it all the time. That was his job, and he actually did it. And I'm just like, man, everyone hated him, including me. I have Phillies-related hatred towards him, but that's different. Like, he would say something, he would intend to say it, he would say it, and then he would shut up. He would just shut up and stop talking.
When Tim McCarver was the worst quote-unquote broadcaster in baseball that everyone would pile on, and it was a lot of fun to do the memes and to dunk on Tim McCarver and things Tim McCarver says and everything that came out of that. But ultimately, just like with Alec Boehm, I never had any visceral deep down hatred for Tim McCarver that so many people had. He always just sounded like a kindly grandpa filling in the gaps between Joe Buck calls, and I don't know, it never truly bothered me. And hearing those two guys together together, especially with the Phillies being in the postseason, started to just become reflective of like the baseball I was most excited to see. So that never really bothered me, but it is funny to look back now at the much more prominent and like tragic issues in baseball broadcasting and the depths to which some of these national broadcasts have sunk and how much of it is just interviewing players during the game. And then you look back and you're like, man, we used to just hate Tim McCarver because he was telling a story about a butterfly while we were between batters. And yeah, I think history might look a little more kindly on him.
No, I'd kill for a butterfly story.
I mean, I think it might be worth a bit of a reappraisal, going back to some old games and listening just to see what we might have been missing, because hindsight is 20/20. So I think it might be worth going back and giving it a listen, especially compared to, was it Joe Davis?
Mm-hmm.
Who doesn't know?
Yeah, Joe Davis and John Smoltz. Yeah.
Here's the thing. He's got the voice, but his calls and everything he says is all so pedestrian. I just, there's nothing joyful in what I hear him do. It's just a great voice. And John Smoltz just won't close his mouth. Every thought that comes into his head has to come out of his mouth. There's no silence ever. And it's the worst. I would go back to Bucking McCarver. I would go back to that in a minute. Bring them back from like 1998, 99, maybe 2000. That's a great time. Bring them back from 2000 and have them do this again.
You know, there's a certain type of broadcaster or podcaster that the instinct within them is to just fill the silence and constantly mm-hmm. expound and never, you know, repeat themselves, possibly even in like trios of repeated statements just to get a point across. And the worst part is they don't have the self-awareness to correct themselves. And I think everybody's just gotta sit back and watch when somebody like that's on the mic, because they take up all of your time and they're wasting 100% of it.
I gotta tell you, we're talking about Tim McCarver. I used to have an issue with like Chris Wheeler and Scott Graham, and like I listen back now and I'm like, man, those guys were good. They did a good job. You know, I wouldn't mind having Chris Wheeler back in the booth. I used to hate Chris Wheeler, and now I listen back and like, man, Chris Wheeler was okay. If I could go back and educate my younger self, I would do it.
Ruben Amaro, who is one of the worst broadcasters out there, let me tell you, he just sucks.
I don't mind Ruben Amaro. He's all right.
I do.
He's from the same. I was being self-referential earlier, but also Ruben Amaro fits into that category as well.
I didn't catch that.
In that he is, he also just, you know, he's very afraid of a gap in commentary.
That's all right. Here, for this podcast, I don't want gaps in commentary. Otherwise,
let's just have
a
couple minutes of silence. Give people a chance to catch up.
Starting now.
Yeah.
All right, that went great.
That's really nice.
That'll do it for... People like in their cars, like, what is going on right now?
They were actually silent for several seconds.
They were actually
silent.
Why? That is jarring. You can't do that. You can't
that
do
is
that.
Not an ad, that's not a break for an ad break. That is not a break for an ad break, please.
No. On that note, that'll do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Justin and Liz, my roundtable partners here at the beginning of the week. If you want to watch this podcast, you can always do that on the WHYY YouTube channel. All of our roundtable podcasts are there. So just go to YouTube, do a search for WHYY, and then you can find the Hittin' Season podcast and subscribe, and you'll get every show that you want there. If you are someone who still listens the traditional way through the Apple Podcast, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts, tell your friends and family about us. We will be here forever. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time. Forever, I don't know, right here on Hittin' Season.